It's ranging basically from ammunition that was fired by the coalition, but has failed to function. Ammunition that was fired by the government, by the Iraqi military, that also failed to function. We estimate at least 10% of that ammunition has failed to function, so it's still there, on the surface or in the ground. In addition to that, all the ammunition that was fired by ISIS, that was improvised ammunition, so with higher failure rates. On top of that, you have all the improvised explosive devices also. In completely homemade improvised devices that were manufactured at an industrial scale by ISIS. And not in the tens, not in the hundreds, but in the thousands. And sometimes very complex devices, ranging from tripwire devices, pressure plate devices, anti-lift devices, and even infrared devices that we're finding.
You use the term evil genius. Would these infrared devices be an example of that? What other examples of new IEDs do you have?
Infrared devices as such is not something new. It's something that has been used in the past, but not to this degree and not as many as we find in Iraq. Another example, I think, is the use of or the manufacturing of conventional ammunition, like artillery ammunition, that ISIS had the capacity and they set up to manufacture on an industrial scale, not cottage industry, but basically having a full manufacturing facility where they were melting the steel, they were making them the mortar rounds in the mold, they were filling them with explosives that was also homemade, completely homemade, homemade fuses. And then they would have a palleting system and a marking system that was ISIS specific, and they even had quality control going through this process. And not manufacturing a few rounds, but thousands of rounds.
So highly professionalized.
Industrialized.
Industrialized,
Yeah.
right. There are long cables with devices every few meters. Could you comment on that? Explain what it is?
Yeah, so sometimes we encounter devices where several explosive charges have been connected together. The fusing system can still be the same, meaning that it could be a pressure plate or it could be an anti-lift device or someone opens a door that it goes off. That is one part. So it might be artillery rounds, artillery grenades that have been connected together, several of them, almost like a necklace. That is one thing. We also find very high amounts of explosives sometimes in those devices. It's not a few kilos, but sometimes hundreds of kilos of explosives, all homemade.
And would those be set off one by one, or is there some sort of chain reaction?
They all explode more or less at the same time because the detonation speed is so high.
Once an area has been liberated, what does UNMAS do? What are your steps?
So what is important is that we support stabilization. We support the stabilization priorities set by UNDP together with the government of Iraq. So, and based on a list of priorities, we then enable the next step. So I say that we are next step enablers in supporting UNDP and the government so that rehabilitation can be carried out, so that they can access facilities. Sometimes it's a question of us surveying a critical infrastructure building to make sure that there are no explosives. But sometimes that will also lead to a clearance intervention so that we have to clear the explosive devices that are in that location. But very often it's just as important just to confirm that there are no explosive hazards, because even the belief that there are explosive hazards will prevent people from using certain facilities. So we work very closely with UNDP, work very much as one UN. Very, very closely with UNDP in following their priorities.
People are starting to come back now. As you say, there is this fear of the problems of explosive hazards. How do you protect these people? How do you educate them in the risks that they face?
So that is a critical component of our work, to deliver risk education and risk messages to the populations. And that is done in different ways. It is done in IDP camps before people are returning. It is done through social media, which is something that works very well in Iraq. And it's also done face to face, where we're basically showing photos and pictures of what the explosive hazards can look like, and also educating them in what to do. And it's not only the people who's returning, it's also all the workers who's working in this environment, like people who's removing rubble, engineers, people who's doing rehabilitation, who's doing reconstruction. to be able to identify, to recognize explosive hazards, and then act accordingly so that they report and they avoid them.
Are these programs that are spearheaded by UNMAS, or is it also in collaboration with UNDP?
So we train UNDP workers, we give them risk education training, but otherwise we work very closely together with a number of implementing partners who specialize in this type of activity. And we also work very closely with the government of Iraq and the national authority who's in charge of explosive hazard management in delivering those messages.
And is that coordination functioning well?
Yes, it is functioning very well. I think for me, working in Iraq has been a very, very positive experience. It's really working as one. We work very closely with UNDP. We work very closely with OCHA. Many of the missions, it is 3, 4, 5 different UN entities participating in one mission together, sometimes together with the authorities. It is really teamwork in Iraq.
What are your expectations for Iraq in terms of explosive hazards in, let's say, the next 5 or 10 years?
I think that we will be able to address the high priority areas and support stabilization in the coming year. But I also think that 10 years from now, there will still be explosive hazards in Iraq, just like we see in Germany, we see in France after the Second World War. They're still finding explosive hazards, and it's going to be a similar situation. But we will be able to address what's high priority, and then we'll have to prioritize after that what comes next.
You've been in Iraq a long time, as well as many other countries. What is your personal experience of the country? What does it mean to you to be there every day and doing this work?
For me, Iraq means a lot because it was the first country I worked in outside of the military. I had worked in Bosnia, I had worked in Kosovo. But as a civilian, Iraq was the first country I worked in 1999, clearing landmines. So it means a lot coming back and realizing that some of the staff, Iraqi staff I had then, they are still there and they're now working for the government, which is, of course, making things a lot more easy also in terms of cooperation, that we know each other, we worked together in the past, and some of them I've stayed in contact with. It's, of course, saddening to see what has happened over the last few years with the new contamination, because the legacy contamination that was already there was extensive. On the border to Kuwait in the south, along the border to Iran, of course, and from internal conflict. But it means a lot being able to come back to Iraq and contribute to what I think is a success.